Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. The Let's Get Busy podcast is brought to you by All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in new ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com. This episode of the Let's Get Busy podcast is sponsored by Gallery Nucleus, a gathering place for the illustration art-loving community that specializes in high-quality prints and art books from some of your favorite children's book illustrators. Christian Robinson will be exhibiting original illustrations from his books Gaston, Josephine, and Leo, A Ghost Story, his latest book, at the gallery September 19th through October 11th. Gallery Nucleus is offering listeners of the Let's Get Busy podcast 15% off your next purchase by entering in the promo code BUSY15 at checkout. That's BUSY15. Visit gallerynucleus.com to browse original artwork and prints and bring your favorite art home. Welcome to Let's Get Busy, a weekly podcast where I talk shop and get down to business with authors, illustrators, award winners, up-and-comers, and everyone in between. I'm Matthew Winner, an elementary school librarian, author of the Busy Librarian blog, and your host. This is episode number 189 of the Let's Get Busy podcast with Ed Veer, author-illustrator most recently of Max the Brave, published by Sourcebooks. I have a special connection with Ed's work. I love it. I really do. And so does my son. So much so, in fact, that it was the first public library book I've ever had to pay for. Yeah, you'll hear more about Ed's book and that story in a second. Ed's newest book, Max the Brave, is an easy one to love, too. If you're able to make it out to any of Ed's U.S. tour dates next week, I highly recommend it. Check the episode show notes for more details and enjoy the listen. Here is episode number 189 of the podcast with Ed Veer. Let's get busy. Welcome to the Let's Get Busy podcast, Ed Veer. I am thankful that I have you, at least for now, while the internet allows it.
Well, it's a delight to be here.
I, you know, this is one of those sort of long time in the making. We've been planning to connect for a while. And in that time, I've had the great fortune to have a copy of Max the Brave in my hands, which is your newest, which will launch at the same time that this episode releases. And can I just say what a wonderful book you've written, Ed? It's really great.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. That's so lovely to hear. Thank you.
Would you mind giving the listening audience a summary of the book, of the story, if you will?
Yeah, of course. So Max the Brave starts off, it's a picture book, so it's obviously, it's all about how the words and the pictures relate. And that's one of the things I love about picture books, the ability to do that. So it's a story about a young kitten who looks incredibly sweet. and he looks so sweet that people always want to dress him up in ribbons. But he doesn't see himself like that at all, not in any way. He's a fearless kitten. He's a brave kitten. And he's a mouse chasing kitten. He's a sort of kitten who, if you put a ribbon on him, he will tear it off and stomp on it. So as I said, he's a mouse chasing kitten, but because he's so young, he doesn't know what a mouse looks like, but he does know that he should be chasing one. So he's very polite. So he goes through the book asking various animals if they are a mouse. And he meets first of all, he meets a fly who's not a mouse at all. He's a fly. So Max is very polite all along the way. Then he meets a fish. Max politely asks him, "Excuse me, are you a fish by any chance? Sorry, are you a fly by any a mouse by any chance? And of course he's not. He's a fish. And he says, "Oh well, a mouse did just dash outside." And he keeps meeting all of these animals. They keep on not being mice, and it's all very lovely and polite. And then he finally comes across a mouse. And he says, "Would you happen to be a mouse by any chance?" And the mouse, who's obviously not, he is one of the sharper tools in the box, I think, says, "Who, me? Certainly not. I'm a monster. But I did just see a mouse asleep over there." So Max thanks him and goes on his way. And over there happens to be asleep a very large monster, who Max thinks is a mouse, so it's his duty to chase this mouse. I'm not sure if I should tell you any more than that.
I think we should stop right there. Just to say, though, that one of the great ways I love that the way your art works in this book is that Max is this little black kitten that we see constantly, about the size of an adult's thumb. You could almost cover him on every page.
Yeah.
And so playing with perspective that way, the fly, of course, is very, very small, and the birds are small, and the fish is small. And the first real sizable animal we get is this elephant that comes on, which I love that you, Max says, "Excuse me, but would you happen to be a mouse?" And the elephant says, "Eek, mouse? I'm not a mouse, I'm an elephant," says elephant, but I didn't see him skitter that way. But that's sort of the first time that we are able to see perspective, that, oh, all of a sudden, here's a large animal. But boy, when you get to that monster, and the monster just fills the spread, there's an effect there that I think we, along with Max, and we are reminded, this is Max the Brave, but you look at that monster, and it's just, you just feel like, this is not going to turn out okay.
This is not somebody you want to tackle. Absolutely not. If you've got any sense, anyway. Yes.
But I think the greatest thing, and maybe why Max, to me at least, is so lovable, is that Max is fearless. Max is brave. So we never see Max veer away from those characteristics ever, not once.
Absolutely. Well, I just wanted him to be sort of, he looks super sweet, and everybody inevitably goes, "Oh," but he's the sort of person who'd be stubborn, and he's super tenacious, and just, he doesn't want to be seen like that. He's, you know, he's basically, he's like a toddler who's exploring, super curious and exploring the world. And nothing is going to stop him until he gets his fingers burnt. And that's how he learns.
Like a toddler. I love that. Yeah, it's that. There it is. I think that the other thing that speaks so well to being able to focus on the character and works sort of so well graphically that you do. And Ed, this is, I've said to you prior to this, I'm quite a fan of your books. I love your aesthetic. I love the color palette you employ. It's always wonderful. And in Max, I love that page turn after page turn, the background is just awash in a single color, that we have these great blues and yellows and pinks.
I wanted it to be a real sort of visual treat. I treated this book, it's very minimal and graphic in the way it comes across. I wanted something that felt really beautifully designed and spare, so that the illustrations, you really focus down on the illustrations. And it's a very, all the characters, their expression is really important, and especially Max, because that's how he's sort of relating to all of the characters as well, the expression around the eyes and that sort of thing. So because it's so minimal, you really focus in on what's happening with the characters.
Yeah, and I think even more so to that degree with Max, we almost don't even see that he has a mouth, so it's all in the eyes.
Well, that's it. And when I was thinking about this book initially, he had a mouth to begin with. And I just thought, you know what, I love it being really simple, and I really like the challenge of making him expressive but without a mouth. So you've got to get everything in the eyes and the body posture. And sometimes limitations are really nice to work with. They're really good fun to work with, but it makes you work a lot harder on everything else. So that's what I had to do with this book, and it's been so much fun to write and to illustrate.
Oh, and I believe I saw, correct me if I'm wrong, but you have a sequel coming out, at least over there in the UK, you have a sequel coming out.
Yeah, that's right.
Congratulations.
I do. Thank you. That's coming out in about 3 weeks. In fact, I was just at the Edinburgh International Book Festival this weekend and read that alongside Max the Brave. It's called Max at Night. And Max is extremely tired. He's way past his bedtime. All he wants to do is go to sleep. So he has to sort of brush his teeth and scrub behind his ears and then say goodnight to a few bits and pieces, finally ending up with the moon. But he can't find the moon anywhere. He can't see the moon. So this it becomes a sort of long nighttime adventure in a sort of an attempt to find the moon, basically. And it's quite a different book. It's really a book designed to get your children off to sleep. So it's more poetic and it's more like a lullaby in a way. But it was lovely. It was my first chance to read it to, I had 100 children, for a couple of events and see how it went down. So it was nice. It was fun to do.
And it sounds like, if you said 3 weeks, it sounds like it's releasing in the UK at the same time that Max the Brave
pretty
releases
much.
In the US.
I'm not sure if that was, I think that's just coincidental, but yeah.
But neat
pretty
that
much
it does,
at the same
yeah.
time. Yeah. I think it's, they're coming out about within 4 days of each other or
wow.
something.
Is this the first, I think it is, knowing your work, but is this the first time you've had a chance to return to a character in a book?
It is, and when I had the idea for Max, I really wanted him to be a character that I could revisit. There was something really strong about him, and I just thought, you have many adventures in you, and I'd like to explore those. And in fact, I've just finished the third Max book, so that'll be out next year in the UK and possibly the following year over in the States. I enjoy it more and more every time I come back to Max.
Wait, so let me ask you, and I apologize if I ask this the wrong way, but Ed, how did Max come to you? I talk to illustrators, and sometimes they talk about this nature of a character one time just popping up in their illustration book, and they just sort of won't leave, the way that characters become people to you, become a relationship to you, right?
Well, yeah, exactly. All of my characters, you never know where they really come from. Everything comes from a drawing. So I start drawing, I normally start with an eye, and I genuinely don't know. You know, when I'm just exploring, I don't know whether I'm going to be drawing a lion, a gorilla, an elephant, or a kitten.
You start with an eye?
Just start with an eye, and then you sort of feel your way into it. But I did want to do something. The book I'd just done before I did Max was called Bedtime for Monsters. And the illustration in that I really enjoyed, but it was much busier. And I thought, I've always loved really simple illustration and trying to tell a story simply. And so I wanted to do something really simple. And so I thought, a little character who's as simple as Max is to draw, you know, graphically, and he's just, you know, he's a little black cat. He's so simple on a simple color background. That's so much fun to work with. You know, it's and I had an idea that's what I wanted to do, but I didn't know who the character was going to be at all. And he just, I don't know, he just appeared, as they do. And he, you know, always it takes a while to sort of, this first drawing of him doesn't really look as he looks now. I think he's even simplified yet more from the beginning.
Mm. But there he is, and now you're off on adventures with him. This is great just to get to see where, I guess almost for you just to get to capture down what adventures Max is having. You get to see this character come to life and then go, oh, I wonder what it would be like if he's chasing a mouse or trying to find a mouse to chase.
Well, absolutely. In fact, oddly, there was one night when I was, it was an evening. I tend to sort of have, be more productive in the evenings, and I was just getting into a flow with Max and trying to discover who he was. And I just had him in all sorts of different situations, but he was talking a lot. And I was trying to get an idea of his voice. And he was super, oh God, he was so sassy, absolutely sassy, and sort of, he wouldn't be told anything. And that hasn't, that I think that's in his nature, but you intuit that in the book a little bit more than he's just outright being sassy kind of thing. I really enjoy drawing him. He's a lot of fun.
Oh, that's wonderful. You know, I have to bring up too, I would be remiss if I didn't bring up Banana, because Banana was my, and maybe perhaps I said this to you when Chris Houghton introduced us, maybe I said this to you, but Banana was my introduction to you. And it was so in such that it was the first library book that my son destroyed.
Well, I don't know to take that as a compliment, or did he destroy it in rage and anger?
Oh, in love. This was Jonah at the time was, he must have been just a year or something. And very similarly, in Banana, you've got that great, the background is not busy. We're focusing a single color in the background, focusing on the character.
Well, that's so astute, because that's exactly really the feeling that I wanted to repeat with Max.
Good. And I've done I've done
several books that were all a bit busier, but I love the really simple dynamic of Banana. And for anyone who doesn't know it, it's a very simple book, but text-wise, it only has two words.
I was going to say that the challenge of two monkeys are finding a banana and just asking one another back and forth. I mean, once it's banana with an exclamation point, and the other is banana, asking if they can share. And the way that they sort of work it out with that other word, which maybe I don't even want to spoil the other word.
I'm not sure you should say it. It's one word, which is banana, which is repeated.
Yeah.
Several times by one of the monks. So basically, there are two monkeys. One has found a banana. The other one wants a banana. It's basically a book about, I did it as a book about sibling rivalry. Mm. And it's kind of about me and my brother when we were young. And in fact, I remember when it came out and I showed my brother, who's quite an austere, very serious architect, he just dissolved into giggles looking at it, because he knew it was us when we were about four or five, and we were not willing sharers at that age at all. So yeah.
Well, sort of at the culmination of that story, when colors start popping all over the page, that specifically, there were a couple other parts, is where Jonah had grabbed the page and just ripped it out of, as they do, the grab reflexes and all that. There were a couple tears. But
that's the tantrum page, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's,
I remember,
sort of earth ground shaking. Yeah. I want this banana.
And you can't help but read it that way too. And I remember bringing the book back to the public library and just saying, as a school librarian myself, saying, "I need to pay for this book. I we loved it too hard, and it's great." And the woman was like, "So sweet." She said, "Oh, I bet we could tape it together." And I said, "Oh, you can't. I'll tape it together, but you don't need anyone else reading it, you know, Frankenstein together this way." But we still have it. Yeah,
we loved it too hard.
Yeah,
Well, you know what? That is one of the most fun books. I go on the road sometimes and do things in schools and literary festivals. And in fact, at Edinburgh, I got the kids to read me that book. And it's so much fun. I have a PowerPoint projection, so the images are really big. And I tell them, you've got to say banana how you see the monkey saying it each time. And on that tantrum spread, wow, they really go for it. They scream that word out. It's so much fun.
Well, you get at the other side of that too, which is that your illustration is, the character is so expressive that it's very, very easy, much like in Mo Willems, Don't Let the Pigeon Drive the Bus. It's very easy to see this is the way I'm supposed to read this. And I think that, especially for a young reader, someone being an emerging reader, that is such a great tool to be able to read the illustration so well, so that it can support the text so well.
Well, that's a really, really good point. And I think that's one of the wonderful things about picture books, that, you know, the pictures tell the story just as much as the words. And I never think that the illustrations should be illustrating the text. Mm. They can tell their own story. You know, if you actually saw the manuscript for Banana, the first however many pages, the first six pages, it just says Banana. You know, there's no story in there. It's, the story is all in the pictures. And it's something I've got really interested in. I've been doing some some teaching work teaching teachers how to teach children creative writing, but trying to stress the importance of visual literacy, which I don't know about in the States, but here I think schools don't place a lot of importance on it. But it's something that we innately understand. We can understand very sophisticated things through a picture that, you know, when we're, say, 4 years old, that we just don't have the vocabulary for yet. But we can, we understand, if you draw an indignant character, that would be understood by a four-year-old. They had no clue about the word, probably indignant at that age, I think. But so they're remarkably visually sophisticated. And it's something we take for granted, but it's, yeah, it's, that's a wonderful thing about pictures. So even if a book has two words in it, it may be a lot more sophisticated and telling a more sophisticated story or dynamic than you think it would be because it's only got two words, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, and you've got such a great, fully formed concept of not just storytelling, but also the role that a book can play to a kid with visual literacy and building that. And that's something certainly we talk about an awful lot in the States here, especially because of the immensely growing popularity of graphic novels and talking to parents about this is how they work. But what brought you into writing for children? It sounds like you have this built-in rapport of working with children already.
Well, you know what? I never imagined I would end up either doing the books or much less standing up on a stage.
Really?
Sort of essentially performing.
Yeah.
You know, when you're reading and you're drawing with kids, you're there for an hour, and yeah, it's an amazing thing. And I was terrified when I first had to do it. I thought they're gonna literally cut me down. I'm not going to be able to cope with this. But then you learn, and it teaches you a lot about writing, actually, because kids aren't polite. They can be polite, but if they're bored, they show their boredom. So you see where your books work and where they don't work. And also you get to hear kind of what kids like. So doing events in schools and literary festivals has really taught me a lot about writing. But I fell into doing books by accident. I studied fine art, painting, and when I left art school, I got a part-time job at a greeting card company, just helping the art director put together collections. And after a while, I thought I'd like to have a go at illustrating some of these cards. I think I could do it. And I illustrated six cards. This was in London in the UK. And then I went traveling in India for 6 months. And I came back and I didn't want to work at this place anymore. And they, frankly, didn't want me to work there either. They thought I was a bad influence.
Oh, no.
There was too much laughter coming from the art studio and probably not enough work. But they handed over a letter that had come from Orchard Books in New York, who'd seen the cards and asked me to illustrate a couple of books. So I was so lucky because it's such a hard world to get into. I mean, incredibly hard. Mm-hmm. But I was also I was very lucky to know. Do you know Jan Pienkowski?
No, I don't.
He's very well known over here, and I think. I think he is very well known in the States, but maybe a few years before. He did a series of books called Megan Mogg and a book called, do you know Haunted House? It's a pop-up book that would have come out in the early 80s.
Yeah, okay. I'm Googling the name while I look. I bet as soon as I glance at the illustration, I'll know.
Oh, well, he's fantastic. He's a family friend. So I grew up visiting the studio and just thinking, wow, I wouldn't mind this life. It looks pretty amazing. I always loved drawing. From the age of five, I wanted to be an artist. So to visit Jan's studio and to see, you know, this is a place where art is created, basically. This is what I want to do. It looks like such an amazing world and a wonderful thing to do. So it was always in there somewhere.
Wonderful. Well, great that it has lived there with you, that it has sort of called you in.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's a world I love, and I feel incredibly lucky to be in it, and you know, to have the luck to have, you know, my books published. And then, you know, to be able to come and, you know, to chat to amazing people like you. And I'm touring the States, as you probably know. I'm doing a book tour starting in mid-September for a couple of weeks, which is just all fantastic. It's, you know, wonderful.
Well, and I've also seen through your website and through the events you have that you've also gotten to do some live drawings with this jazz band.
Oh, wow. That's so much fun.
What's this all about? That sounds amazing.
So this is a book that's actually not available in the States, sadly, called Mr. Big, about a very large, forbidding-looking gorilla. Because he's so large, everybody runs away from him because they're terrified. But he's actually inside a really... It's basically don't judge a book by its cover. Mm. He's a really lovely guy, but he just can't get anyone to see that. So one day he finds a piano in a junk shop, takes it home with him, carries it on his back because he's so big and strong, and takes it to his apartment. And it's sort of set in New Orleans. It's sort of beat era New Orleans, I think. It's very much set in the jazz beat world. And he starts playing the piano, and people hear this beautiful music pouring out of the window, and they all gather around, and they love the music, but they don't know who's playing it. They don't know it's Mr. Big. And anyway, one day he gets an invite to come and join the guys at the Blue Note, and they all see it's Mr. Big, and that actually he's you know, inside he's just a big softy kind of thing. And so he finds friendship. And I was approached by a jazz band who I love called the Neil Cowley Trio, mm-hmm. Who are just an amazing, go and hunt them down, hunt their music down. They're so much fun. They're fantastic. And they'd been asked to do, an event for children at a great, music venue in London. And they got in touch with me and said, listen, we know your book. Would you give us permission to use it? And I said, absolutely. And if there's anything else I can do to help, just let me know. And so we had a conversation and we thought it might be fun to have me up on stage and live draw. So we sort of broke the story down into 10 segments where there's a drawing and a piece of music along with it that sort of just tells the mood. And it's, oh God, it's just so much fun. It's so much fun. And really, you know, it's terrifying too, because you're drawing live and you don't know how it's going to go. But it has all the joy of, you know, being in a live band, being up on stage and all working together, which is very different from the normal sort of working in the studio scenario. So it's fantastic. So I've done quite a few of these gigs now. Sometimes it's sort of, you know, 1,000 people in the audience, which has been so much fun.
Wow.
So yeah, I mean, yeah, maybe one day a US tour. That'd be nice.
That would be outstanding. I love just even...
It's a lovely thing. And for the audience, they're watching a drawing unfold and they don't know where it's going. We're using something called a visualizer, which is basically a video camera, which looks down at me drawing. So you just see my hand and the pen, and I'm able to draw as I draw in the studio rather than on a flip chart, which is how you're normally asked to draw at events, which isn't how you draw well. So I can draw in the way that I normally draw, and I'm drawing alongside amazing music and all of those. And then we're narrating the book, and all of those things combine to make a really nice way to tell a story, and, you know, quite a unique way to tell a story as well, I think.
Oh yeah, I mean, that, just looking at the images you have online, look, it looks like so much fun. That's great that you've been able to do it not just one time as well, but several times into quite a large audience. That's great.
Yeah, and I've done it with a few different bands as well. So world domination awaits.
Well, hopefully. You know, we do have jazz bands in the US when you come for this tour, Ed. I'm just saying.
Well, okay, hook me up with a couple, or just one will do. So up for that.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. I love that.
If I can manage to do this gig in New Orleans one day, that would be Yeah, that would be a dream. That really would.
Where is this tour taking you in the US? Are you from, is it posted anywhere yet?
Okay, I'm going to post it up on my website when I get full details. I've pretty much got most of the itinerary now. We start on the 22nd of September in LA. I'm there for a day or two, then San Francisco for a day or two, then I think it's Houston, Dallas, somewhere else that I forget. Then Washington, Chicago, and we end up in New York on just at the start of October. I
Oh,
think the
that's
tour
crazy.
finishes on the 2nd or 3rd of October. So I'll let you know, and maybe if you could post a link to it on your site, that'd be fantastic, actually.
I absolutely can and certainly can promote it as well. That's great. You'll be here
Fantastic.
for 2 weeks or so,
Two
and to
weeks,
come to DC and to come to New York, you're really hitting all of these big publishing spots. So hopefully, yeah, that's
absolutely. So
great.
yeah, it should be a lot of fun. They're working me hard. I'm going to need a
I
holiday
feel
afterwards, but it's
you.
going to be so much fun. And so many of these places that I've only been to San Francisco, LA, and New York, so I'm just super excited to get out on the road and see a bit more of the states as well.
That's wonderful. Well, I wish you a ton of luck with that, and I hope you have, I know you will have so much fun, but I hope after you adjust to the jet lag that you are able to
Oh,
really enjoy
I
it.
don't want to think about that. Yes, but yeah, no, it should be fun. It should be fun, I
Yeah.
think.
Well, let me close our time together with a question that I've asked the guests every time they come on, but it's always fun to ask someone when they're from over the pond because it's a very, as I said to you before, a very American-centric question, but I think the heart of it is universal. So, Ed, I'm assembling an all-star kid-lit dream team kickball tournament, and I would love to know what one person alive or past from the kid-lit world you would want on your team, and why?
Right. Okay. Well, there are so many people to choose from. I have so many heroes. Jan, as I mentioned, Jan Pienkowski. I could easily go for E.H. Shepherd, who illustrated Winnie the Pooh and Wind in the
Yes,
Willows, who I
yes.
think is just sensational. But somebody who is still making fantastic work is Quentin Blake. And I just find him utterly inspirational. I love the anarchy in his drawings. One of my favorite books was Do You Know the Enormous Crocodile?
I do.
Written by Roald Dahl. And it's so darkly comic. And the drawings just they work so beautifully with it. They're so anarchic. They're so sort of, his expressions are just a joy. And they're just fun, I'd still look at his illustrations and laugh because he's such a good observer of life. And I think that's what all books, all really good children's books have true observations from life in them. And his illustrations are just full of all of that. And they just make me laugh. And there's pathos. There are many, many different angles and sides to what he does, but he's fantastic. So I'd say he is. I don't know the positions in kickball, but he's pretty much what we'd call a striker in soccer terms, anyway.
Yes, thank you. Ed, it was perfect to get to talk to you today, to get to know the person behind these books that myself personally, but so many other people love. I'm so excited for Max the Brave to meet all of our American readers, as well as for Max to continue his adventures in the UK and around the world. It's a wonderful time in children's publishing, the way that it's reaching everyone, and I'm so glad that you are one of the people behind these books creating such wonderful things for our kids. Thanks again for coming
Oh,
on.
well, Matthew, thank you so much. It's been a joy. And thank you for all of your support as well. It's really, really massively appreciated. And yeah, I'm looking forward to being in the States very soon and meeting lots of lovely people. Thank you.
Let's Get Busy is recorded and produced by Matthew Winner in his library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. Theme music is by Blue Ducks. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, there are a ton of great episodes of Let's Get Busy archived and waiting for you at lgbpodcast.blogspot.com. And if this episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment on the blog or rate Let's Get Busy on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.